And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. Steve Shippey with us this hour as we take your phone calls. Steve, are you glad you took this path that you have taken?
Yeah, I definitely am. You know, I think it helps me in my own way with trying to understand these things. And I guess more importantly, it's evolved to helping other people.
You're a rap singer too, right?
Yeah. I've done music for many years.
Now, how did the paranormal haunting investigations occur for you for the Travel Channel? How did that happen?
Well, so essentially, after releasing 10 full-length paranormal investigation documentaries independently, basically somebody had viewed one of the films and felt that I would be a great addition to the family over there.
And you are. You are.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was approached, and simply it was put to me that we really love what you do, and we would like you to continue being you and doing what you do, but we would like you to do it here, and we could help you branch out and be able to travel the country, helping people besides what you're doing, kind of in your hometown area.
What has been one of the most emotional things for you, Steve, when you've been on these hauntings and these trips with some of the owners? Do they break down?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. You know, when you start asking, some of the harder questions and trying to figure out, what's going on, when they start to describe how their life has changed, what it's done to the family, a lot of times it will cause a lot of issues between family members, people that experience a haunting. It's a very devastating thing. People sometimes will divorce because of it. It changes the whole dynamic. It changes them as people. And I think at those points when you're asking these questions and you're saying things like, how long has this been happening? What were you guys like before you lived here? And I think at that point it's kind of when they really realize the gravity. Because you know how it is when things start to happen to you, sometimes it's gradual, and you're dealing with it for years.
And, yeah. kinda, and then it takes jumps on you.
Yeah, you realize how far it's gone.
When you were in the Danny Rollins house when he was a kid, do you think you made contact with him?
I personally believe that the spirit of Danny, was in that house along with whatever else was in that house. There were definitely multiple responses that we're getting on these meters. Whatever was at the house, if we were to say it was one force, it was able to set off all the devices simultaneously in different rooms. We experienced really bizarre things. At one point, it sounded like something slammed onto the ceiling. The house didn't have a second floor, and it sounded like something smashed on the roof and then literally drug across the ceiling. You know, the audio picked it up. Everybody that was there, the crew, everybody heard it. Things that just made no sense. It exhibited a power that we aren't used to seeing.
No, not at all. Not at all. And do you think the spirit at the house was the baby, the young boy, or was it the adult Danny Rowling?
You know, personally, as far as how I believe, I would believe that it would be the current Danny that, you know, when he lost his life, it would be that same individual. That's how I would see that.
All right, let's take some calls for you. Let's go to Barbara in Phoenix, Arizona to get us started. Hello, Barb. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my
sure
call
thing.
This evening. I'm a first-time caller, but I listen to you all the time.
Well, thank you.
I was intrigued to give you a call and to join the conversation. My take and my experiences with my own paranormal friendly ghost, if you will, I've never really experienced anything demonic. My take on it is that your own personal spirit speaks to the spirit that is coming and speaking with you. I was also told that when you do have a spirit in your home, in your dwelling, if you are open to the spirit and welcome the spirit will be friendly and be welcoming to you. In addition to that, when you leave the dwelling, if you move, you have to have a conversation with your spirit. and say, you know what, this is where you dwell, but I have to leave, and you can't follow me. You have to stay here. But I've enjoyed my time with you, and that's happened to me twice, where I've had two spirits that they've been very friendly to me, a little mischievous, I'll say.
That's maybe, not bad. You know, that's not bad.
You know, like sneaking up on me, and you know, when I'm sitting at my desk in my home office, and I see shadows going by, and I have to say, you know, say no, I'm busy. I can't play right now. I can't.
Could be worse, Barbara. Right?
Excuse me.
Could have been worse, right?
It could have been way worse. So I don't know where I fit into this conversation, but I've had two experiences where my spirits have been friendly to me and I've enjoyed their company. And then I've had to have that conversation and say, I'm now leaving this residence and this is where you live and please do not follow me. So does that fit into your narrative tonight?
That's an interesting possibility. Steve, do these spirits always follow people from place to place?
No. And I agree with a lot of what she's saying. I believe that, you had asked me earlier on tonight if I believe that, all spirits are bad and I don't believe that. I think that a human spirit encompasses, you know, the soul of a once living human being. So I do believe, as she's saying, that you can rationalize, with certain spirits, just like you can a person, and trying to explain to them sometimes that, you know, hey, we know that you're here and we are willing to coexist with you, but, you know, we're going to ask you to maybe quit doing this or that. You're scaring our daughter or whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. And sometimes you can rationalize with them and ask them not to follow you. Does it always work? Not necessarily, because people, again, just like in life, in death, can be not so great people. But, you know, but I would like to think the majority of the people in the world are good, and I think that certainly can happen, where you can reason with the spirit by being respectful and receiving respect in return.
Steve, why does it seem that little kids, tend to communicate with these spirits much more able than adults?
Well, you know, I guess me personally, I believe that, you know, as children, we don't have all the filters. You know, we don't see through all the lenses of things that we're, I guess, indoctrinated with later, whether it be certain religions or certain things or what we're taught here and there and through even television, whatever the case may be. As we grow older, we kind of block ourselves off from being open to all possibilities. And I think it's because they're just seeing life through more of a pure lens at that point. So these things aren't out of the question. And as well, I think spirits are attracted to that as well. Sometimes I believe personally spirits don't want to be revealed just yet. So they'll kind of reveal themselves to people that they think will see them and perhaps interact with them, but won't be trying to force them out of the house, if that makes sense.
First time caller, Randall in Arkansas. Go ahead, Randall.
Yes, speaking on what your guest, Stephen, was saying just now, but also I just want to say, George, thank you so much for taking my call.
Oh,
I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. But speaking to the openness of what would perhaps make you more, shall we say, attractive to a spirit, a ghost, a demon, what have you? It's one word, okay? I'm about to blow your mind. It's one word, and that word is bisexuality. You need to make yourself open to all possibilities of these spirits, because I'm here to tell you, I've had multiple paranormal experiences, and. Pardon my crassness, excuse me, but pardon my crassness, but ghosts are horny.
Well, I'm not sure they are, Steve.
You know, I'm not sure what to say about that exactly. But I'm definitely listening.
I've heard cases, though, of people being abused by spirits. Yes. Have you?
Yes, absolutely. And, of course, you know, there's the well-known creature that they refer to as the succubus.
Yeah.
You know, it also reminds me of that case that that movie was created about, the Entity that came out in 1979. I saw that in the mid-'80s as a kid. Definitely scared the hell out of me. But, you know, that poor individual, that woman was said to be abused in many different ways by a spirit in that sort of sense.
And what did you think of the original Exorcist movie?
I thought it was definitely very, very disturbing. But I also think they did a very good job of portraying evil in its sense.
Next up, Jan in Brooklyn, New York, east of the Rockies. Hello, Jan.
Howdy, howdy.
Hi.
I got two questions. The first question is, what I've done twice, two friends, they told me I said things, and I don't remember, but I think it had something to do with entity stuff. And sometimes I really believe, because I know the context they told me, I believe sometimes you get these entities and you don't remember and you don't know what you're doing. And then the other question is, I'll just ask that question.
Well, let's use that one first. Steve, is it conceivable people lose their memories?
I mean, you know, it is possible, yes. I mean, especially with, I guess, more powerful spirits or darker forces, you know, that is something that has been known to happen in certain cases where people will have, they'll experience time loss, don't really recall moments of their day, things like that, typically people that are under some form of oppression.
Interesting take. Next up, John in Kansas City, Missouri. Hello, John. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure
thing.
Always
enjoy your shows.
Thank you.
I had a question or two for Steve and a comment. I started having paranormal experiences as a young child and places I've lived and visited ever since. And I never had any, you know, buddy talk religion with me or about ghosts or any of that as a kid. When this stuff started happening, you know, it was like just out of the blue. And I'll give you a quick story about a thing that happened to me when I was in first grade. My brother was in second grade, and we lived in a house that had a haunted third floor. So we never went to that floor because we knew there was, actually the whole house was haunted, that third floor worse. So we dared each other to go up and touch our landing of the third floor with our hand, and I was the first to do it. And something grabbed me and seized me and was crushing me. And then it let me go, and I told my brother what happened, and he thought I was faking, like, you know, it didn't happen. So he went up and did it, and it did it to him. And after that, we told our parents about it. All that. It was like the weirdest thing in the world. Whatever it was, it didn't like kids. But I just found that I've been open to paranormal activity ever since. I can go to a hotel, and the hair stands up on the back of my neck, and I've lived at other haunted houses. So my question for Steve is, you know, kids, like, say, you already kind of mentioned this, don't have any filters, preconceived notions about it all. But does it automatically make you open to paranormal activity, which is very real, by the way, your entire life?
Are kids more like magnets, Steve?
You know, I think there is some validity to that, certainly. And I do think that, you know, going along with what he's talking about, I do believe that once you do see something paranormal, once you experience something paranormal, I think one of two or both things can happen. You're aware of it now. You know that it's real. You know that it exists. So you are now seeking and hearing and looking for things that the average person might not even notice, that strange sound that happened. Maybe they think it's the house settling or whatever the case may be. So you're more open to realizing something could be around you. And on top of that, I also do believe that spirits seem to know when an individual believes and or has an experience, and I feel like they will be more attracted to that individual than the average person.
Joe, Long Island, New York. Go ahead, Joseph.
Yeah, hi. How you doing, Steve? My question would be on the video games. I've heard some cases locally where people were serial killers and they had a habit of playing extensive video games. So that would be my main question as at least a doorway to opening, you know, a mindset towards the occult. And then also, do you see any activity within eight objects as well?
Well, you know, without a doubt, I do believe that spiritual attachment, you know, object attachment is certainly a thing. I think that, you know, sometimes a certain object will hold an emotional value to somebody. It meant something to somebody. And I do believe that spirits can certainly attach to an object.
We have a guest named John Zaffis, who's a expert, Stephen, on attached objects. And he is totally convinced, as you just mentioned, that spirits attach themselves to certain things.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's, in my opinion, he's basically the leading authority in that division, and I wholeheartedly believe it's a real thing.
Absolutely. Did you know the late Rosemary Ellen Guiley, by any chance?
No, I did not.
You would have loved her. She was one of my co-authors in a book, Talking to the Dead, and was a regular guest on the program, and just an expert on dreams, the unusual, the paranormal. Greatly missed. Now there's a spirit who's out there that I want to communicate with us. Next up, let's go to Joe in Monterey, California. Joseph, take it away.
Thank you for taking my call, George.
Sure.
Okay, Steve, let me introduce myself just briefly. I do a lot of paranormal work from time to time. I also do a lot of exorcisms and past life regression and travel to deal with patterns in past lives and other in between lives as well, what's going on in the astral, how to deal with certain things and healing work that could be done from there. What I found, and I think this would be interested in you, is that sometimes when people die, and in mass too, like during wars and stuff, there's a lot of souls that perish and they want revenge for being murdered. Now, you're investigating serial killers and people that are really deeply disturbed when they are executed. And I'm not one for capital punishment because I know that they're not going into the light and they will seek vengeance. Do you see any patterns from case to case that they may be a similarity? Not that they're possessing them, but they may have incarnated, or maybe they are possessing them. And yes, I know about hauntings. I was a victim of one haunted from a past life.
And that goes back to my question too, Steve, from Joe, basically, is does the dead in a very vicious way continue that?
I absolutely do believe with certain human spirits that the answer would be yes. You know, for instance, I recall when we were investigating the Ed Gein, the farmhouse, you know, where it once stood, and we were investigating there in different places. You know, my teammate, Cindy Kaza, world-renowned psychic medium, she would sense him and say, you know, oh, my God, he's coming toward me with his hands like he wants to choke me.
Oh, geez.
I remember this moment I was actually able to capture on my SLS system a figure that approached her with both of its hands out. So even, you know, even in the other realm, it still has these aggressive and tendencies to want to hurt.
I think you folks have been lucky you haven't been attacked, Steve. We're going to come back and take final calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk about airlines and 5G and what is the potential danger to airlines. And then William Peters joins us to talk about his experiences with the near-death state. So stick around for that on our next Coast to Coast program. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie here with Steve Shippey, our final segment and final calls. Steve, when you were a little youngster in that house of the double murders, you had a haunting yourself. Can you care to share that with us?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We kind of experienced the gamut of different things there. You know, we would see shadowy figures, you know, knocks, footsteps at night, things slamming, ultimately some pushing, things like that, cold spots, many things of that nature.
And did you feel, how old were you?
I was around six when I could really start recalling the events.
God, you were just a little kid. That could have been horrible for you.
Yeah, well, it's definitely something that'll change you, certainly.
Back to the calls we go. Let's go next to Lisa in Seattle, Washington. Hello, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hey, love the show.
Thank you.
It might take a second, so give me a minute to tell you about this.
Okay, go ahead.
I visited my mother in heaven. Now, she had died, and I didn't know it because my phone, I cut my phone off at night to keep from being disturbed. She died 3 in the morning. And at 5 in the morning, I woke up with a dream that my mother was living in this big mansion, and I came to visit her there. And it was this lady there taking care of her. I think it was her angel. You know, the Bible said that we have angels. And this lady was, because my mother couldn't speak, she was real sick before she died. But in the dream, she looked like she was about 30 years old. And when I went up there, I told the lady, take care of my mom. I will be back. And when I left, I looked behind me because I was like, who would be nice enough to let us, I had to leave to plan a family get together.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, who would be nice enough to let us have our family meeting in this beautiful mansion? And I looked behind me, it was row upon row upon row of mansions. Mansions, and you know, in the Bible it said, I go to prepare a place for you because in my father's house are many mansions. And this, I saw just tons and tons of mansions. So I'm coming down from the mountain when I left because I knew I had to go plan this family thing. I'm coming down the mountain. Now, when I was on that mountain, it was so bright. No lights, no lamps, nothing. Everything was just bright. And when I started coming down from the mountain to back to my home, it got dimmer and dimmer. And by the time I got back, it was like the atmosphere, it was just darker and dim. And my sister, I met my sister, and she said, hey, I want to go shopping with you, but I can't go till my husband gets here. And I didn't know what that meant, but it was always something in a dream that will confirm. If it's a dream that's real, remember this, it's always something in that dream that will confirm to you in real life. So I had to go to my house. And then when I finally got my phone on, people said, Mama died. Oh, and I said, oh, no. And my sister from Chicago, I live in Seattle, she came from Chicago overnight. And she was here. And she said, I want to go shopping with you to buy Mama's clothes for the funeral. But I can't go till my husband gets here because he's got the credit cards. See, exactly what she told me in a dream. I want to go shopping with you, but we can't go till my husband get here. I didn't know in the dream what it meant, but I guess he, you know how men are. He didn't trust her with the credit card, so he was coming later, and she had to wait for him. Not only that, the night my mother died, my kids were only 8. My son, now he's autistic, and he feels things. He sees a bad person. When he was a baby at 4, he saw this bad man, and he was a criminal trying to sell me a car that was no good. And my son couldn't even talk. He jumped over the seat and started hitting the man in the head.
Jeez.
What, son, what are you doing? Found out later that man was selling me a car that wasn't even, it was a stolen car. The police came. This man had 3 different IDs. He was a real criminal. And my son just busted across the seat on him. So when my son feels things that don't like people, I listen. So what he did, they were stayed up late that night. It was Friday night, and they stayed up. He drew a picture of a graveyard. Think I'm joking. Up here, we bury people in the graveyard. There are no headstones. They're just on the ground.
Just in the ground.
He drew all of these grassy areas, and it was 3 women. I have 3 sisters, and they were crying. They were in that grassy area that looked just like where we bury her. And they were crying, and up above was 3 angels flying in the air. This kid is 8, autistic. He didn't speak, so I don't know where he got the idea of angels, and they were flying in the sky.
Well, let's bring Steve in on this. Steve, there's no question, again, kids see things that adults don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they see things that adults don't, and they sense things as well that adults don't.
they picked this up, and he did it in this drawing and stuff like that. Do you think it's his imagination, or do you think he actually saw this vision?
You know, I think it is, you know, I think it is very possible. And, you know, going back to something else that she had said too, I mean, even myself throughout my life, I've had many dreams, and it's strange because you know the difference between a, I guess we'll call it a normal dream or something that means something else, and you don't quite understand what it is. And it could be a week, a day, or 6 months later, those events will unfold, and it almost feels like a deja vu. And I've always kind of wondered how that is. You know, it makes you wonder if that theory is all things have already happened, you know, and it kind of transcends if that's possible. But I have experienced that personally as well, so I can identify with what she's saying there.
Next up, let's go west. Dana's with us in Federal Way, Washington. Hello, Dana.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
First-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you. Lots of first-timers tonight.
Yeah, yeah. So my question for you, Steve, what made you decide to go from investigating the paranormal to investigating these paranormal psychopaths, these serial killers? Like, you know they're very dark, they're mentally ill individuals in life, and you know without a shadow of a doubt that they were and are still evil. Like, they have bad intentions they did in life, they probably still will, and with that said, now I know you kind of touched on this earlier, but do you have any specific routines, and I don't want to say rituals, but like routines that you do to protect yourself before or after an investigation of that nature? Like, does anything ever follow you home?
Okay, so yeah, definitely. I would say that what led me into embarking on these cases is I was approached to investigate going back to the Ed Gein case, you know, and that can be seen, Ed Gein, the real psycho. That documentary is on Discovery Plus, but I was chosen for that case specifically because living in Michigan, I'm near Wisconsin. I've got over 20 years experience investigating the paranormal, and so I was believed to be a very good candidate to work on this case. That was the first time that I've investigated a case like that, and to be honest, I didn't know that I would ever do it again, but because of that investigation, when this case came along, naturally, I was chosen to work on this case, you know, as well as, you know, my partner, Cindy.
Because of your experience.
Exactly. So it kind of just, you know, one case led to another case of that caliber. And yes, you know, she's absolutely right. These people were twisted in life, and obviously they still are. And again, to answer another one of her questions, you know, I definitely have my own routine of, you know, keeping attachments away. If certain times I feel like it needs to be amped up a little bit, there's people that I go to that do certain types of cleansings, and there's a whole thing that happens even before I return to where I live.
Next up, we go to Daryl in New York. Welcome to the show. Hello, Daryl.
Yes, speaking.
Hi there. Go ahead, sir.
I have to. Yeah, my name is Dale, though, from Chickawaga, New York, you know.
Uh-huh.
So anyways, what I got to say now, this happened to me when I was 7 years old at my grandmother's farmhouse. Now, you know, it was like, you know, really weird because it looked like that Mad cartoon, you know, from the Mad magazine, and that curtain or that shade went up. And it went wrapped around and around and around, and it went butter, butter, all that. But I knew it seemed real to me. Then when I went outside the next morning, because that bedroom window was so high, and then nobody could have played a joke on me or anything. And that really, you know, stung me for years. And then I used to hear things up in the attic. And then another time, this happened 2 years ago. There was a woman, I had my door locked. When I, you know, I took a little nap in my chair, and I looked up, and then she was sitting there. And then she kept on saying, "Are you all right? Are you all right?" And then she, well, we had a lightning storm, and then when she heard the thunder, which I heard, she goes, "Can I go into the other room to look out that window, because I think that's where the sound's coming from." She never came out. Now, how can you explain that? I mean, Steve, can you explain that?
Well, I mean, it sounds like with the experiences that you had, certainly something was trying to get your attention. And, you know, that's very common that a spirit sometimes will do little things like that to show you that they're there. For instance, like you're talking about the curtain. We don't quite understand sometimes what their motive is. We look at it as they want you to know that they're present. And then sometimes the activity will just kind of stop at that. So I guess at that point, the only way you'll really understand more is if you were to start establishing contact, communication, try to get a message, perhaps bring in a medium. But that does happen.
It happens quite a bit, doesn't it, Steve?
Yes, absolutely.
Have you ever heard of anybody physically hurt by an entity?
Yeah, absolutely. There's people that, will be scratched. I've talked to people that have been pushed down the stairs. Hair pulling seems to be something that happens quite often. So, yeah, that does happen. Absolutely.
First-time caller David in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Hello, David.
Hey there. Hey, George. First off, I'm a fellow Lebanese compatriot. And
super.
Thank you for your service. My dad's a World War II vet, and he'll be 95 next month.
Oh, that's great.
Thank you. Stephen, I have a question for you. You can call me the ultimate skeptic. I'm not here to insult you, but I'm certain you've heard of Randy, the guy that challenges
the amazing Randy,
or
yeah.
Even people that do paranormal.
Now, he's dead now. He passed on.
Oh, okay. I mean, I saw some videos a couple of years ago, but my question is, when you watch, I'm certain you're probably aware of what some of the British guys did, where they would set up a person who claimed to have been a medium or into paranormal, and they set things up on the internet that were easily reviewable, that the person who was said to be a medium could come in or into paranormal, and they made things up in almost verbatim. The people that were claiming to be these paranormals or mediums were saying almost everything that these guys had set up on the internet. My question is, when I watch these shows, they speak in vague generalities. How is it you can convince somebody that what you do, and again, I don't know you personally, how do you convince a skeptic like me that what you do is A, that you are able to communicate, and also B, why wouldn't the relatives of these people communicate with the people that they're related to? Like Teresa Caputo has been completely exposed as a fraud, and she gets caught routinely doing that. So my question is, please try to convince me that what you're doing, that you can relate to these people, whether they're a serial killer, whether...
All right, let's give it a try, Steve.
Okay, well, I guess there's a few things I could say about that. I mean,
Well, and you're not a medium, are you?
No. But, I mean, have people done that out there? Sure. I'm sure that that's the case. Now, for me personally, as an investigator, I'm, relying on tools, recordings, audio, video, K2 meters, a gamut of, different things. But for me, if I'm working with a medium and we are at a location and they're telling me something is here now, something is over there now, and I'm able to go in that direction and see that either my motion sensors are going off or there's a K2 spike or a temperature drop or something that directly correlates with what they're telling me, and I see this, routinely, I would believe there's certainly legitimacy to that. And as far as trying to, win over a skeptic, that's very hard, to do, because I guess if you haven't had the experience and nothing has happened to you, I could understand a degree of skepticism, of course, So.
Well, and Harry Houdini was obsessed with trying to find mediums that were legitimate, and he went nuts, didn't he, trying to do this?
I have heard, some things like that, yeah.
Anyways, we're down to about a minute. How do people watch your show, Steve?
Well, of course, you can go to Discovery Plus, the latest investigation about Scream, the true story of the Gainesville Ripper, Discovery Plus, as well as Ed Gein, the real psycho, also the series on the Travel Channel, Haunting in the Heartland, and my 10 independent investigations are on Amazon Prime, and they can just search my name.
What's your next project?
The next project right now will be a Haunting on Brockway Street 2 that will release around Halloween, and several other projects to come on the bigger platforms.
All right. Good luck to you. And where's Brockway? What state is that in?
That's Saginaw, Michigan.
Oh, back to that house, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Take care. Steve, thank you for being on the program. Really appreciate it. Stick with us all week long. We've got some great shows. We're going to talk about 5G tomorrow and why the airlines are so concerned. AT&T and Verizon have decided to halt their introduction around airports. We'll talk about that. For Dan Galante, Donna Walker, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.